All right, good morning. Welcome into the show on this Monday. Bill Ryder with you, still in New York City. Great to be here hanging out with Ryan underscore Hickey number three, Ryan Hickey, executive producer of the show, Andrew Bogish. Give us some updates later in the program. We've got five things you need to know on a wild college football weekend. The Packers with the second half comeback. Jordan Love completes maybe one of the most remarkable accomplishments in the history of sports for the Packers. Let me explain in a little bit. We'll do buy or sell. We are down to what? I think two people in the Ryder Than You survivor pool, and one of them has told me I better buckle up, Buttercup, to be Bum of the Week, because whoever wins that thing gets to choose Bum of the Week whenever they're around, whenever they're still alive. I mean, I got Andrew Bogish bringing a Dunkin' Donuts in. I mean, I'm never going back to LA. A, we don't have Dunkin' Donuts, and B, we don't have Andrew Bogish, so this is double awesome. Bogus said he can fix one. 888-710-4ISN. We do have Dunkin' Donuts. They're just like three of them. 888-710-4ISN is the phone number. Let's start with some college football. And let's start with an important lesson for Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin is the belle of the ball. He's the prettiest girl that could go to prom. He is the coach to be hired. And in the news about Lion Kelly, in the news about Steve Sarkisian, in the echoes of what could have been, certainly for Jimbo Fisher and James Franklin, even for the Lincoln Rileys of the world, can I throw Luke Fickell on there? Wisconsin fans would say no. There's a lesson for Lane, and that is walk out to the quad at Ole Miss, move beyond the thought of how powerful this program is in the context of the many years and decades of college football. Look around and see home. If you're Lane Kiffin, don't go anywhere. Don't fall for the money. And more than money, as much as money. Because these guys have money. Lane Kiffin's not going to struggle to support his kids in seven different houses or whatever he wants. But sometimes the money that people pay you is the way they value you. And it's ego, and it's a feeling of success. And by the way, Lane Kiffin wants to win football games. And there is a sales pitch you can make if you're an athletic director, if you're a booster, if you're that little devil on Lane Kiffin's shoulder or any other devil on any other coach's shoulder. This is a program you can do more, whether it's LSU or it's Penn State, or if the job becomes open, it's Texas. We'll get to that in a second. I believe Diane Rossini. I don't believe Sark. We'll get to that in a moment. Or it's any other program that has a history of success. You're going to want to believe you can go in there, wrap yourself in the glory of the past, and make it the future. Lane Kiffin, don't do it. And Brian Lion Kelly, with his fake Southern accent and his fake ability to coach football teams at the highest level, apparently, is only the latest example. That program, Louisiana State University, that mighty program, got smoked over the weekend. Almost a 50 burger. I was disappointed it was just 49. I like the term 50 burger. 49-25 at home loss to A&M. Bringing Mr. Kelly. And by the way, easy now to sit here. Now, I said it when he got hired out of Notre Dame. Easy now to sit here and say how disappointing he's been. 19-10 in the SEC. That doesn't cut it for the 10-year, $100 million deal the man was given. 34-14 overall. Many losses like the one that happened over the weekend that got him fired, gone. Many losses that got him, and what a golden, it's not even a golden parachute. It's a golden jet that you can fly anywhere in the hell you want. That got him a $54 million goodbye. That's the buyout. They're still finalizing it, but it's coming. Brian Kelly was never going to work, and you kind of knew that from the first game that he lost, not even the first, the insincerity of the fake Southern accent. I am from Iowa. I don't have a Southern accent. When I moved to Little Rock, Arkansas to be a newspaper writer, you know what I didn't do? I didn't walk up to people and be like, hi there, can I talk to you about the breaking news? You got to be yourself. But the lesson here is that you can be the celebrated one. You can be the coveted one. You can be very successful. When Brian Kelly left, the reason we named him on this show Lion Kelly is because he wasn't honest with Notre Dame and he betrayed a program that should have been at a minimum near at the level of LSU. I don't love it if you're at Cincinnati and you make the jump to insert really good program, Michigan or something like that, Penn State, whatever. Hell, I'm not going to like it. And now he's a big time candidate for LSU. But Eli Drinkwitz is the head coach at Missouri. I know what Mizzou. I went to Mizzou. I know what Mizzou is. I wouldn't like it if that guy, when that guy, if that guy, if Eli goes to Penn State or goes to LSU. Because if Lane Kiffin says no, then Eli's next up. And by the way, Eli, I'm giving Lane some advice. You need to listen as well. But it's a whole different animal to make the jump from Notre Dame to LSU. Those are the same level of programs. Can be, should be. And the fact that Kelly did it doesn't just speak to his arrogance and his lack of loyalty, is my view of this. It speaks to the fact that it doesn't matter how much they want you. Doesn't matter how much they pay you. Doesn't matter how much they, $54 million, guarantee you if things don't work out, but they will, they will, they will. In college sports, for lack of a better analogy, you are the young, beautiful bride, and they are the unreliable rich husband. And if you even remotely don't deliver the fantasies maybe you can't live up to, you will be gone. Do not do it, Lane Kiffin. Don't go. Because Lion Brian, oh, I'm pretending to be Southern Kelly, isn't the only warning that's out there that tells you that the cost of the $54 million buyout, that the actual flip side of the ego gratification is that there will be no patience. There will be absolutely zero flexibility to get the program you're going to at the level of the one that got you there, and you know that took you some time. Lane Kiffin has built something. By the way, Lane Kiffin used to be the punchline. Lane Kiffin has multiple times been the punchline in his career. His career was over with the Raiders. His career was over. What an idiot. When he went to be the offensive coordinator under Saban, who wouldn't take it. His career was certainly going to be over, because who leaves for FAU or anywhere when there's a national championship game to be played? He's the exception to the rule. In a lot of ways, Lane Kiffin is the beneficiary of his own lack of success, because he had to go to Ole Miss. He had to go to a place that wasn't quite that program. He wasn't able to go back to insert whatever program you want. I forgot Lane Kiffin also failed at USC. It's hard to keep up. And he went to Ole Miss a little under the radar. And he's great. He's really good at his job. Guess who else is really good at their jobs, or used to be? James Franklin, outstanding. Jimbo Fisher, biggest buyout in the history of the sport, outstanding. Lincoln Riley, outstanding. Lion Brian, fake Southern accent, not Cage and Rage and Kelly. It goes and it turns quickly. If you're Lane, or if, hell, if you're Eli Drinkwitz, if you're any of these coaches, it's the hardest thing to do outside of being successful is to maintain your success. Don't go. And look, I don't know if Eli Drinkwitz or any other coach at a mid-level, I mean, Missouri's a good program, and they were 15, and they had a good game against Vandy, and they were competitive. Vandy. This is how it tells you how quickly the universe can change. Indiana and Vandy are legitimate college football programs, and the LSU and Penn State are firing coaches in season and paying them generational money to get the hell anywhere else but Happy Valley or Baton Rouge. Think about that. The lesson is, if you've built something and you can win with something and you've collected the political capital, that's what you need. In the past, if you were the college football coach or the college basketball coach, you were a king in a way that was cool and gratifying, and you went to the local bars and they found you a table and everyone talked to you. Now it's political power that you have, the ability to survive, the ability to raise money, the ability to navigate the pitfalls of bad moments, bad weeks, frustrated boosters, idiotic athletic directors. Speaking of which, special shout out to Scott Woodward. Ryan Hickey's going to have to remind me to at least nominate him in a thorough way for Bum of the Week this week. This is the AD, and I didn't know this. I didn't put this together. Ryan did. Shout out to Ryan Hickey, the artist formerly known as Trace. This guy, who obviously hired Brian Lyon, not really Caging Rage and Kelly, and then had to pay him $54 million to go away, had to do that because the former school that he was the AD at, A&M, beat the pants off of LSU. Guess who A&M used to employ? Jimbo Fisher. Guess what Jimbo Fisher has on his resume? The highest buyout in the history of the sport. Guess which athletic director of the time is the one that paid Jimbo that money? Scott Woodward. So you also have to navigate the athletic directors who are hiring you, who may turn out to be checks notes, forgive the harshness, it's a Monday in New York, morons, whatever their title. Lane, don't do it. Don't go. By the way, I'm not a big Lane Kiffin guy. Here's my name drop. I see him all the time where I live in LA in the offseason. The guy can't be bothered to say hello or pass over a pickleball that happens to wander into onto his court. I would not describe him as the most cheerful person on earth in my 6 or 7 interactions with him, but I'm a human being. I'm an empathetic creature. I root for people. So I'm giving Lane Kiffin the advice he needs to hear. Do not go to LSU. If Sark makes the leap, and the reason I keep bringing up Steve Sarkisian is because Diana Russini, we'll get to this in a second, a little more depth. Diana Russini, who's an outstanding reporter of utter reliability, and guess what she covers? The National Football League, not college football, reported that Sark is open to business in the NFL. He's willing to move. You know why? It's hard in college football. And this is the other reason Lane's got to just turn his head, not have his head turned by the LSUs and the Penn States and the other program that opens up. Because it used to be that if you had a certain level of greatness as a coach or the potential for greatness, and all these guys that I've mentioned have it, and Lane's, again, bell the ball in that respect right now, that you needed to go to Michigan or Ohio State or USC or Florida or Florida State or Texas or LSU or Alabama to win. I'll give it it was the Bill Snyder effect. I will maintain, some of you may not even know who that is. You should, but you may not. Bill Snyder coached at K-State from 1989 to, I don't know, 2000-something, a long time. And I think he's one of the great coaches in the history of the sport. I really do. He will never be celebrated that way. Because you know why? He was at a program where you couldn't win everything. You can now. Indiana can. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. Vandy can get good enough. Maybe not this year. Even Missouri, God willing, is capable of being competitive if you build the right structure and you have the money. There was a time when you had to go to some of these programs to get it done. You don't anymore. It's just as likely that the weight of what they expect, the pull of what used to be, the thing that makes you think you can succeed there, is actually the thing that'll get you fired. Why haven't you done this? We're insert LSU. We're Alabama. We had that conversation a month ago. We're Penn State kind of fits. We're Florida. We're Florida State. We're Texas. We're USC. Even Michigan. I mean, Ryan Day's won a national championship, and people were talking about firing that guy shortly beforehand. If you are an up-and-coming or have arrived big-time college football star of a coach, look around. Sark, by the way, and Lane knows Sark well. They obviously overlap together as co-offensive coordinators at Alabama. And for different reasons, Sark had the demons of substance abuse that he had to overcome. And Lane had the demons of, you know, getting a lot too young and arrogance and trying to get his arms around it. They've had similar paths of, you are the next great thing. You are a failure. You have come into the Nick Saban orbit and you have been rehabilitated. And if Lane can look out at Sark, who's at Texas, and I don't know, 2-3 months ago had the next greatest quarterback of all time before we actually saw Arch Manning play. And he is getting antsy and he's starting to realize, this is not Texas, a fortress that protects my career. It's a place that endangers it. Learn the lesson. Look at Lion Bryan, not Cage and Kelly, and the $54 million he was paid to go away. Look at James Franklin, who had on paper the best team in America this year. Penn State was supposed to win the whole thing, and that coach is fired. LSU had a stretch where maybe they could be competitive and be that team again, and that coach is fired. Texas had the best quarterback in the last, whatever, 5, 6, 7, 10, silly year, whatever our take was, and absolutely could win the national championship, you know, if it wasn't Penn State. And that coach is looking around. Lincoln Riley isn't fired, but man, that seat is certainly not cool. Lane Kiffin, the takeaway of the weekend is, stay where you are. Build what you have. And understand that the remarkable evolution of college football means that the places that used to call to you are traps. And the place that you're at that was the rehabilitation job is actually the place where you can make your name. Lane Kiffin, stay at Ole Miss. 888-710-4ISN if you want to give us a call. And by the way, I get it. If I'm anybody, I want Lane Kiffin. The crazy thing is, they may not succeed with him either. It's alchemy. It's crazy mystery. You don't know what's going to happen. All right. So Sark, there's nothing like a full-throated, how dare you? I will tell you the truth. Non-denial. Sark is eyeing the Titans in other places. And he's trying to give you the okie dokie. He's taking a little bit of a page out of the Lion Bryan, not Cajun Kelly, you're fired playbook. Rage! Lies! Rage! I'm not telling the truth. I'm going to let you listen to Sark evade admitting this guy wants to coach in the NFL next year on Rider Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
Dan Campbell, talking to an Odyssey radio station, says the football equivalent of, I've seen Bigfoot. And I'll explain next here on Writer Than You.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, welcome back into the show. Am I allowed on a Monday, good morning, Ryan Hickey, to pat myself on the back, to say, Writer? Nice damn work.
Of course, especially on a Monday when vibes are usually down.
A little back down, right? Quick.
Yeah, pop yourself up. Come on.
Anytime you play a rejoin of me doing a tease, that's a hell of a tease. Except the fact maybe I didn't pay it off. I think I did pay off that one, though. That's a radio term, folks. Dan Campbell's Bigfoot because he believes in the conspiracy of the Chiefs. Basic. Although I was at a bar, this will shock you, over the weekend, and I walked in and I had a Barcelona shirt on, sweater. And some guy in a Giants shirt was like, I love Barca, God, screw by the refs. I'm like, yeah, man, cool. And then he went a whole thing about how the Chiefs, the NFL, is in the bag for the Chiefs. He also believes in the NFL Bigfoot conspiracy. And that guy was our best friend for about 10 minutes. It wouldn't go away. You know that moment where like you need the guy to leave now because you seem nice, but you've had 15 drinks and I'm not here for that energy? Yeah.
Was he wearing a tinfoil hat as well?
No, but he had a Giants jersey on, so close. Close. Good morning. Did you have a good weekend?
I did. I didn't really do much. So I worked actually 7 days this week. So it was a busy weekend.
You saw your culture for real, which we'll get to later in the show.
How about that?
I never doubted them except for the first 6 or 7 weeks.
Could we say three letters together?
You say it first.
MVP.
I mean, maybe.
Come on. Okay.
You can't. Okay. I think that position's a little tricky, right? The Saquon Barkley MVP case was totally legit, did not occur. He's pretty good.
Not bad, Jonathan Taylor. Not bad.
He's tailor-made for that team. All right, let's stop. It's Monday. I gotta get it together. So I was just talking about the fact that Lane Kiffin needs to stay at Ole Miss. Needs to, not just in the sense of the danger that I walked you through that exists in these so-called big-time jobs, but also he can win at Ole Miss. He can win everything at Ole Miss. And I think that's true for a lot of these guys. Kurt Cignetti's a different kind of cat in Indiana. And can I keep throwing Eli Drinkwitz in there at Mizzou, even though they're not on the same level? Eli is a different kind of coach at Missouri. Lane Kiffin is unique in that he is, God, I hate this term, he's a brand. He is his own brand, and his ability to connect with young people, to be interesting, to rise above on the social media static machine and be heard, he'll be able to recruit, succeed, charm anywhere. He's good enough at Ole Miss. Ole Miss is good enough for him, and he's the king of that spot. He shouldn't go. And one of the points I made, if you're just joining us here on the Infinity Sports Network, is that Sark at Texas is a reminder, don't leap to the next big job, so-called big job, because Sark at Texas is reportedly on the lookout. Diana Russini, outstanding NFL reporter. By the way, someone who's been called out by Aaron Rodgers before for getting reports correct, which is what she does. Diana Russini reported over the weekend that Steve Sarkisian, the head coach at Texas, is open to the idea and has made it known to NFL decision makers, GMs, that he is open to being a coach in the National Football League. Oh, and by the way, the Titans job that's available, that wouldn't be so bad. I like Nashville. The I like Nashville part's not in there. But that's the deal. And there's nothing like a full-throated denial where you don't deny it. So I'm going to play this for you. This is Sark responding to Diana Russini's report. I just want you to listen for the words, not true. I won't go to the NFL. I'll be at Texas for the foreseeable future. I want you to listen to the non-denial that occurs here as Sark does a lot of raging and a lot of how dare you report something that's true, perhaps, without saying the report is not true.
Yeah, I'd love to touch on this, so bear with me for a second, because it really pisses me off that one person can make a report that in turn the entire media sports world runs with as factual. To the point of my agency and my agents have to put a statement out that they never have done. Historically, CAA, Jimmy Sexton, and Ed Manowitz have never do that. But I had to do that to protect my locker room and my team. And I thought it was absolutely ridiculous. I thought it was completely unprofessional of that person to put that report out. And the fact that everybody ran with it is borderline embarrassing for the media. And I respect what you guys do. I really do. And everybody else. But the fact that everybody ran that as truth is really embarrassing. Okay, so I've got a small circle when I make decisions on what I do and what I don't do, and nobody would speak on my behalf without me knowing. And so where that report came from, I'd love to talk to that person because it's absolutely ridiculous.
Look, I'm a down-to-earth everyman who can't believe the lies of the media that my high-powered agency that basically operated on the Death Star in Beverly Hills, creative agency, artist agency, would had to put out a statement. I mean, are you kidding me right now? Say it's not true. Say she got it wrong. Say, I don't know what's going on. It's a recruiting trick by some other program trying to screw up my ability to get players. It's not what he said. He's looking for an out. And it doesn't, there's nuance and complication in these things. Diana Regina got it right. Do not hear this wrong. By the way, when insiders get stuff wrong, I will say so. When the Shams of the world are actually carrying water for LeBron James because they're at the same agency, I will tell you, like I just did there, tread carefully sometimes in sort of how you interpret that. That's not Rossini, who I don't know at all. I think I've ever met Diane. I think I sat next to her at a press box. It's not personal. She's just that good at her job. Here's what can also be true. Sark can be putting out feelers, not because he has to leave Texas, because he's open to it, because it's something that's a possibility. Sark is smart enough to know that it's a lot easier to try to leave Texas for the Titans as the current Steve Sarkisian than the current, I don't know, Lion, Brian, Rajan, not Cajun, Kelly, or James Franklin, or Lincoln Riley might have been able to get an NFL job a few years ago. He can't now. And so it's there's a middle ground. It isn't just, I will not unequivocally go to the NFL. It could be I'm open to it. This Arch thing isn't working out. I got to figure out, if you're Sark, you can put it on Arch probably this year. You can't next year. If Texas comes out next year and Arch Manning's there and he's not playing very well and they're not winning football games, you have 2 years in a row at Texas where you are underachieving. I don't know. It may not work. And that is not to say that he's going to jump. He's going to leap. He's going to leave. It's that he has to be smart enough. And he is. He just told you he's rep by CAA. They're a big deal. He is smart enough to know what I've been telling you and what I hope Lane's listening to. The landscape of college football has shifted. The ground under your feet is not steady or stable. And things can turn really, really, really quickly. And I already said this, but I'll say it as it relates to Sark. And the other thing is, expectations are so critical in life. If you're at Texas and you are in maybe the richest spot on earth for football talent. Cali would have something to say about it. Florida would have something to say about it. I get it. You're expected to recruit Texas better than anyone on earth. And by the way, you're not just competing against A&M and Texas Tech. And you're competing against Alabama. You're competing against Ohio State. You're competing against everybody. You also are expected to recruit every other state better than every other program in that state, including in Florida and California, where those programs are expected to do what you're expected to do in Texas. You're expected to get the biggest names on earth, Arch Manning, and for them to be outstanding. You're not allowed to lose in the margins. It doesn't matter if Vandy got good. It doesn't matter if Oklahoma has a moment. It doesn't matter if Alabama's on a roll. None of them. Doesn't matter if Georgia's Georgia. You better win and win and win and win and win. And maybe what Sark is starting to realize, he's already peaked. Not because he can't do it, but because it's really, 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 really hard to do in college football. As money pours in, as boosters get involved, and this is the other thing, as boosters start to have to be required to fund your programs, when you have to find $54 million to say, say La Vie to Brian Kelly, when you've got to go and raise tens of millions of dollars for James Franklin to retire because he failed, when you've got to go get the equivalent amount of money year after year after year to bring in the recruits that in part maybe didn't arrive, that didn't allow these guys to succeed, or to retailer your program around whoever the new coach is, those boosters who give the money aren't going to give it and say, lose my phone number. It's the opposite. And it becomes, now you've got one boss and an AD, and then you've got 15 bosses in the boosters, and you've got 40 bosses because there are more boosters involved. And it starts to get to a point where you're pulled in so many directions, you're doing politics more than you're doing football. This is a reality of the sport now. I've told this story, but I think it's interesting. I remember Nick Saban, this is long before this time, being around Nick Saban for a story, and a bunch of boosters at an event that was kind of, it was a closed event, but I was there telling, basically raising their hands at Q&A time and telling Nick what was what. And Nick finally gave it. Nick, like I know him. Saban finally gave a speech, basically said, shut up and let me do football. Don't ever talk to me about football. I don't want to hear your opinion. That's not the way the world works now. And it's another reason you just stay where you are. If you're any of these guys, Eli Lane, any of these guys, because political capital also protects you from the boosters who at certain places think that they should have power and it should have say. I'm not even sure if Sark can be successful at the NFL level. And I'm not mad at him at all for thinking about making the leap and making the jump. I'm really not. Let me ask you this, Ryan. He's not taking the job, but the fact that Sark is on the lookout, if you're Penn State, do you want to go get a name? Or do you just want to go get the next up-and-coming coach who might stick around? Like, who do you, put Lane Kiffin aside, who do you want out there? I mean, do you want, if Lincoln Riley got fired and you hadn't hired somebody, would you want to go get a Lincoln Riley for your Penn State team?
No, honestly, because it's, I would expect more of the same. If he can't win at USC, I don't know how you're going to win in conference at a different school. Like, it's one of those, honestly, now with more schools open, LSU, right, maybe we'll see Texas, who knows, Auburn throws their name in the ring, Florida State. It's kind of one of those, I'd rather have someone, what Indiana did, like in a Kirk Cignetti route, proven winner on a lower level.
Who can bring their team, too.
Who can bring that, right, in a transfer portal era.
Yeah, right.
If you have success at a JMU, et cetera, bring them over. You feel like you can have a better chance to stay. And also, too, this is interesting, maybe get them at a lower price.
That's true.
You're paying $50 million, Penn State and LSU are, to have your coaches never work again. You're going to now give, I don't know, $100 million for Sark, Lincoln Riley, whoever, you know, the big name is Lane Kiffin. I don't know if the economics now with players getting paid, where that, you know, if that makes the most sense.
And it's, Brady Papinga said something last week on the show that I keep falling asleep thinking about, that we're in a bubble and that all this money that's being raised and being spent is not, and I hadn't thought of it, isn't sustainable. And that eventually when that bubble pops, it's going to be musical chairs. You're going to be a program. You're going to be left with what you have. So if you're a program, and this takes a lot of foresight and a lot of guts, and you got to think that this take is right, but you might want to just figure out who you can hire that when the money dries up for most programs, whoever's still in that seat that you have, that you're, that person's able to succeed without $15 million brought to the program every single year to go hire the next kid. It ain't easy. Here's a quick tip, though. Don't hire Scott Woodward. Guy behind the buyout of Jimbo and behind the buyout of Lion, Brian, Cajun, not Cajun, Raging Kelly. Give me a break. Unbelievable. Can someone out there, because I'm lazy, can someone out there that's listening just go look up on the public records what that guy's made, what Scott Woodward has made to give away hundreds of millions of dollars of other people's money? I'd love to know. By the way, if you're listening, you're an athletic department. I am qualified and able to be incompetent enough to give massive contracts to morons who can't win. So just, I'm here for that if you need someone to do that. All right. 888-710-4ISN is the phone number. You know what? It's been a rough sports stretch, right? Like, it's been a rough, you got Penn State going down. You got Missouri going down. You've got the Dodgers going to win the World Series, spend $500 million. You got guys that shouldn't be coaching, getting paid $50 million to go away. How about some good news? Aaron Rodgers had a really rough Sunday. Aaron Rodgers had a big taste of humble old bleep pie. And we're going to all enjoy it after a sports flash from Andrew Bogish.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
And Bill, your Sports Flash is sponsored by Advantage Gold. Before kickoff, get help securing your financial future with Advantage Gold. Text GOLD to 85545 now and request your free gold investment kit. Go to AdvantageGold.com for terms. Message and data rates may apply. LSU has now fired offensive coordinator Joe Sloan. His status reportedly fueled yesterday's argument between Brian Kelly and AD Scott Woodward. Partly because he didn't want to fire Sloan, Kelly was let go last night. The school's announcement said they are still negotiating the details of his $54 million buyout. Aaron Rodgers' first game against the Packers did not go well. A 16-7 halftime lead became a 35-25 loss in Pittsburgh on Sunday Night Football. Rodgers' offense only reached the red zone once, settling instead for four long Chris Boswell field goals.
I feel like we had some discipline issues and some penalties that were unnecessary, and then you're not going to win a lot of games when we're so bad on third down. Boz bailed us out with some four incredible kicks, but You're playing good teams, you need to score touchdowns, and we just stalled out in the high red zone.
Rodgers threw for 219 yards and two scores. Jordan Love had 360 and three. I'm Andrew Bogish.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
Dan Campbell, talking to an Odyssey radio station, says the football equivalent of, I've seen Bigfoot. I'll explain next year on Writer Than You.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. I keep saying this. Good music, Ryan. Doing it. Commanders Chiefs tonight on the old Monday Night Football. That's a pretty good game. Commanders win. Both those teams are 4-4. Chiefs win. The magic of the turnaround continues. What are you laughing at? You think the Chiefs are just going to roll them?
No, I agree. It would be a good game. But Jaden Daniels
Important game.
So Marcus Mariota versus Patrick Mahomes doesn't have the same cachet as Jaden Daniels Mahomes. So
important game. You won't even go there. I'm trying to get excited.
No, it is. No, you're 100% right. The stakes are legit. But just when now when we were talking about the flying Hawaiian, no disrespect to Mariota, air is let out of the balloon, at least for me.
You said the nickname with disdain.
It's a good nickname, and you're right. I feel bad. I like Marcus. That's unfair, but it's...
Anything can happen. Did you know that the Dolphins crushed the Falcons?
What? And Tua looked good, so you're right. Anything's possible.
He did, and the Jets... I mean, it'd be the Bengals, but the Jets beat the Bengals. I think the Patriots and the Colts are good, by the way. I know you think the Colts are good already. Keep winning games. The game that was... Can we not talk about the Ravens game, by the way? Is that cool? Thanks. Appreciate
what game?
That.
It's a bad loss, by the way.
I'm aware. This is why I just... Also, my weekend was spent with a Vikings fan and two Packers fans. That's who my buddies are from high school.
Oh, I forgot. I assumed you're all Bear. That's right.
Now, because Dubuque, Iowa is kind of... You triangulate a little bit, right? It's a little bit of everything. But I'll say this. I told them this, that I was rooting for the Packers in a serious way. That I wanted Micah Parsons to sack Aaron Rodgers 15 times because I don't like Aaron Rodgers. And I respect Green Bay. Unfortunately, in that win for the Packers, in that impressive comeback in which they outscored Mike Tomlin and Aaron Rodgers and company 28-19, and one of those touchdowns was garbage time TD. In the how many times did Rodgers go down? Three magical times. His former team brought him to the ground. A fact locked in. A truth that I thought was there became absolute. I think the starkness of Jordan Love versus Aaron Rodgers, and not just the victory for Love, but the second half clutch comeback, can't be daunted reality that reminds me of Aaron Rodgers in his Packers days, and Brett Favre, by the way, in his Packers days, a truth locked in. And that is the Green Bay Packers have literally accomplished maybe the most impressive thing in the history of professional sports, barring, insert whatever dynasty you want of greatest dynasty of all time and the rings that they racked up to get them. They have had a generational quarterback and or, because Jordan Love isn't there yet, a quarterback you can win the whole thing with. All right, whatever Jared Goff has been the last couple of years in Detroit, like that at a minimum. They've had a top X quarterback that you can win the Super Bowl with going back to 1992. That's astounding. Without a break. There's not a year of Matt Castle in there. There's not a year of Rex Grossman in there. There's not 4 years of, we thought drafting Kyler Murray or Tua was going to be it, but then we figured it out and we got the guy. Without a hitch, as the National Football League has changed again and again and again and again, the singular rarest commodity on the face of the earth in professional sports in football, a quarterback they have found. And not just that, quarterbacks who aren't just individually outstanding at the NFL level, which is really hard to find, but are also durable enough to play year after year after year after year after year and not get shook. I'm not talking Russell Wilson, who had a handful of really good years, and that was it. I'm not talking a Matt Ryan, right, who was good. Matt Ryan, I think, won a co-MVP, if I'm doing this right off the top of my head, and almost won a Super Bowl. Ryan's going to fact check me. But Matt Ryan's not He's not a guy that you rely on again and again. He had a nice run. This is an organization that just gets it right. And not just that they've done it since 1992, which is amazing, by the way. And just to give you some perspective on Jordan Love, he completed 20 consecutive passes. 20 consecutive passes. He threw for 350-plus yards, three touchdowns, did not turn the ball over, and was not sacked. So this is where the truth locked in for me. Am I putting Jordan Love in the Hall of Fame? I am not quite yet. But do I now know that the Packers have successfully moved on at the right time from Aaron Rodgers to a guy that is markedly better than Rodgers is now as Rodgers competes with the Steelers team that is pretty good, right? I do know that. And think about the ways in which these guys left. And whatever the Packers' magic is, whatever deal with the devil they made, whatever's in the water up there, I don't know what's going on. Brett Favre, retired, unretired, made life miserable for that organization. And not just the organization, for that quarterback. And then Aaron Rodgers, and at the end, was Mr. I'm smarter than everybody. This GM is passive-aggressive, isn't great. This coach, passive-aggressive, isn't great. That was not an easy transition. And look, things are complicated. I got it. Jordan Love said before the game, learned a lot from Aaron. Aaron was great to me. I believe that. The more we kind of get a picture of Aaron Rodgers, the more it seems like he's really good to a lot of players and really bad to other people around. Like support staff, coaches, if they don't kneel at the altar of Aaron Rodgers' greatness. And a backup quarterback is going to. And if you do that, like Sinatra, if you know who's in charge, he can treat you well. But the Packers, that the Packers have pulled it off again is amazing. Great win. They're 5-1-1. They beat a Steelers team that and Pittsburgh was up in that game. There was a stretch where it was like, oh, Jordan Love doesn't look very good, and Rodgers looks fine, and the Steelers are kind of grinding out a victory. It's classic Tomlin win. They're putting Jordan Love in their place. Rodgers is good enough. First half is over. Looks like Steelers maybe going to win this thing. And then it went a totally different direction. What was it? 16-7, I think, at half. It wasn't a blowout, and then the Packers just did it. And it just hit how remarkable it is beyond the singular win, beyond the 5-1-1, beyond the fact the Packers, you can make a very strong case, they're the best team in the NFC, is the fact that they've done it again. They have the right guy. And Jordan Love is getting better and going to continue to get better. And I thought Matt LaFleur, who gets a lot of credit for this, by the way, LaFleur had to navigate himself as an offensive guru the end of the Aaron Rodgers era, and then he had to transition to Jordan Love. And if Jordan Love hadn't worked out, and again, it's really easy to say, I always knew Brian Lyon Kelly was going to be a bum. But most people didn't. And most of us, certainly myself included, were highly skeptical of Jordan Love, didn't look great at times, had been on the bench for a long time. Well, this probably isn't going to work out. And you fast forward to October, mid-October of 2025, and you got Matt LaFleur just waxing poetic about the fact that Jordan Love is, in fact, that guy.
He was on fire. That's why I kept wanting to throw the football. And then, you know, our run game's been just, there's some good moments and some not so good moments. And, you know, it's a credit to them. I really thought going into it, that's a really, really tough defense, I think, especially when you look at their front. So they did some good things. But ultimately, I think there's a lot of things that we got to do a lot better.
Now, by the way, I'm not sure it is a very good defense. And that is a Steelers team that just gave up almost 30 points in the second half. 28 points just in general is not certainly ideal if you're supposing an elite defense. But I want to just... And so if you've got a Steelers team whose defense is rickety at best or poor, I think that's more accurate. And you have an Aaron Rodgers, someone where it's only going to get harder for him for reasons we've talked about, just to age and the wear and tear of a season to maintain where he's at, the Steelers' season could unravel. I want to talk about Jordan Love. And Ryan was talking about Jonathan Taylor being the MVP, and maybe he's the MVP. And I think that's a legitimate case to be made, 100%. You said this, Ryan. He's untackleable. He's a video game character in the real world. It's amazing. Let me just, because in years that Mahomes has won the MVP, there have been times where he hasn't been talked about. And this happened with Embiid a couple years in the NBA. The Packers have lost a single game. They have that stupid tie, but they've lost one game this year. Jordan Love has completed 70% of his passes. He's got 13 touchdowns to two interceptions. If the Packers finish the season, fifth, so dumb, the tie. You know, never mind. Don't make him MVP because of a tie. 15-1-1. And this guy throws 30 touchdown passes and four picks. I mean, that is near the range of what Aaron Rodgers did the year that he had 28 touchdowns and two picks, I think, and was a celebrated quarterback, MVP, that level of player. Don't. It's not just that they have another quarterback who's really good. They have a quarterback who just marked, what is it, can't be the king till you beat the king or whatever, unseat the king. Just made that expression up. Jordan Love did it last night. He was better than Aaron Rodgers. And the thing is, I want to be mad about it. I want to rage as a Bears fan. I want to pretend it's not the case. I don't like some people in sports because I think they're obnoxious, and I will say so. But I can get past whatever my view is, and I'm not a Packers fan. I hate the Packers. To tell you, and it's begrudgingly, they are amazing at quarterback development, acquisition, maintenance, growth. Because the scary thing about Jordan Love, and Ryan, credit to me, I did kind of call this at the start of the year, if I can say that, right? I was on the Jordan Love bandwagon. You were a little more doubtful. Is that fair?
Very fair.
He's going to get better. I'm telling you, he's going to keep getting better. He's it. He's the real deal. So, huge win for the Packers. Incredibly impressive. And I'm sure really meaningful. I mean, it was meaningful for me, and I'm not a Packers fan, to do it to Aaron Rodgers and to do it in a sort of a giant, remarkable second half. But also, I think the huge takeaway is the Packers have done it again with a quarterback. Big win for the Broncos. I got to give a little, I guess. I don't really think the Cowboys are very good. It's hard to tell. But they did basically double them up. And this is the other thing, Ryan. Denver doesn't lose at home now under this guy. And it is impressive. And at 6-2, they're in the mix for all this stuff. The Colts just... The thing about the Colts is they look great. They are playing the Titans. I mean, it's not a... You know, you got to play who's in front of you. It's not as big a statement game for me as... I think the biggest statement game of the weekend for me was probably the Packers. Right? Like, Eagles beat the Giants, and they dominated them. All right, it doesn't really matter. Patriots' record is what they says, but you know what it is. It's 6-2. But is beating the Browns that impressive? I don't think it is. I think the big takeaway for me, outside of maybe the Chargers all the way back on Thursday Night Football, which feels a million years ago, is Green Bay. But congratulations to your Colts. 7-1. I still worry. I still think about, still kind of in my brain, is the Arizona Cardinals from a few years ago.
I think it's week 12. They go to Kansas City. Circle it on your calendar. We'll find out there.
But, dude, like, who cares if that's their only loss over a certain stretch? You got this.
Well, now I want to go into that game and win.
All right.
Let's go.
Ryan's got big plans, and they start with 5 things you need to know about college football next year on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, good morning. You got the New York right. Good morning. Welcome into the show. Happy Monday. Bill Ryder with you here on the Infinity Sports Network. Appreciate you. Thank you for listening. Free Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts, whatever affiliate is wise enough and kind enough to let us be on their airwaves for these 2 hours. Phone numbers 888-710-4ISN. Buy or sell coming up. We'll talk a little Chiefs and what feels like the inevitable, for many of you, frustrating turnaround that will probably continue tonight. But right now, we've moved some things around. We used to do this segment at the top of the hour in the old days, in the old show, and I kind of like it there. It's time for 5 things you need to know about this weekend's college football action.
Your security clearance is on a need-to-know basis. And these are 5 things you need to know. Number 1.
Bill, we've talked a lot about the name Lane Kiffin so far today. Why is that? Well, over the weekend, him and Ole Miss had a big road win over Oklahoma. Ole Miss beat the Sooners 34-26 as Lane Kiffin recorded his first road win over a ranked SEC opponent in his 6 years in Oxford. Their quarterback, Trinidad Chambliss, was tremendous, threw for 315 yards, while the defense clamped down in the fourth quarter as Ole Miss outscored the Sooners 9-0 in the final frame. And with the win, they climbed one spot in the AP poll. They sit at number 7 in the country at 7-1 heading into November.
And again, we have hit this so many times. It is amazing how quickly a program can succeed or fail, who can get there or not get there.
Number two.
Texas A&M, Bill, is 8-0 for the first time since 1992 as they absolutely embarrassed LSU 49-25. The Aggies at one point in this game in the second half scored 35 straight points and have now scored 40 or more points in four straight road games for the first time in program history. This beatdown was so bad, they're not allowing Brian Kelly to coach again.
That was funny.
To put some historical context, the 49 points, by the way, that A&M scored in Tiger Stadium, the most LSU has given up at home since they allowed 52 to Georgia back in 2008.
By the way, some odds have just come out about who they will allow to coach next. John Summerall is 3-2, betting favorite. Joe Brady at 2-1, though there's talk about him maybe going elsewhere. Lane Kiffin, 4-1. James Franklin, 6-1. I actually see it. I wouldn't hire him. But in desperation, people do desperate. I'd rather have Eli Drinkowitz, who's the next best, most likely at 8-1, than James Franklin.
If you were LSU, and I gave you the option, you can only hire one of these two men.
Okay.
Actually, forget that. If you're Mizzou and you had to hire one of these two men.
All right.
James Franklin, Brian Kelly, who are you hiring?
Oh, my God. I'm the AD. I'm not Bill Ryder because Bill Ryder hates both of them.
No, you're Bill Ryder. Who do you want to see coach your alma mater? And there's no C, none of the above.
I mean, James Franklin.
Okay.
Because he's unlikable, but I'm not sure he's the same level of loser. And what James Franklin can do is a success at Missouri, but it's not at Penn State, right? Win 10 games most years, lose the big game, but be in the big game, I will take it. Let me ask you this question. If you're LSU, would you rather have James Franklin or Urban Meyer? Urban Meyer's not going there. He's 25-1, but
wow,
he's on the list. Just.
Oh, that's a great question. Oh boy, I think if I'm them, I think I would hire James Franklin because he's a safer choice.
Also, why would you hire if you're Urban Meyer or James Franklin? Do you want the LSU job? Aren't you kind of waiting to see if Sark goes to the NFL? I'd rather have the Texas job. Give me the Texas job all day long over that job.
Yeah.
I mean, for all the reasons I outlined, don't do it if you have a job. But if you're unemployed, I would imagine, my guess, is that it changes your perspective on work. USC is not going to come open, it doesn't feel like. But if Texas does because Sark leaves, that's the best job in America, by the way. Of all the jobs that are open right now or could be open, Texas is the job. And I'll say the same thing. Lane, don't do it. Don't go. The other thing about Sark leaving is that this idea that as within states and within sort of college football ecosystems, as one program rises, one program falls, isn't quite the way truth that it used to be, because the talent, the transfer portal, and the money has spread out where you recruit from. It's not just Texas versus Texas, but as if Texas takes steps back, it does help A&M a little bit. So it could be a really good moment for that program as you're starting to figure things out. If Sark says, to hell with this, I'm going to go coach the Titans and get fired in 2 years from that job.
It is interesting. Look, I'll say this. It's a good time to be a fired head coach, right? A lot of opportunities, a lot of big names.
What a different universe, by the way. To have a job where when you get fired, you get more money than most of us will ever even dream of.
It's not bad.
I should have gone into coaching. Can you imagine me as a coach?
No.
You got it, guys.
Number three.
Oh, boy. You mentioned as one program falls, another rises. LSU has fallen. Penn State has fallen. Florida's fallen. And who's the beneficiary? Vanderbilt. As they did take down your Missouri Tigers 17-10.
Sell. Oh, wrong segment.
To move to 7-1 for the first time, Bill, since 1941. It was far from pretty, though, as the Commodores did benefit from a goal line stand, a missed chip shot field goal, Bo Prabula leaving in the second half because of a gnarly ankle injury, and did survive, maybe this is just kind of adds insult to injury here for Mizzou, survive a completed Hail Mary that was downed at maybe the half-yard line. Vandy, though,
yeah.
While they're 7-1, things are looking good, top 10 team, they are on the road at Texas this week, and finish the season at Tennessee. So it's two tricky road games here in their final four as they try to make the college football playoff for the first time ever.
So here's the thing. I was with my buddies watching the game. Thanks, guys. They were real generous about the whole thing. And I had people texting me, and they were shocked how calm I was. I knew that we were going to lose the game when the game started, but I actually knew that we were going to lose the game when we hit the upright on the chip shot on the field goal. It was the most Missouri thing ever. Because if you watch that drive, they should have scored. One of the receivers dropped a pass, went right through his fingers. It's kind of thrown behind. He sort of had to turn with his back to the end zone. I mean, it was the most Mizzou giveaway. We can't handle the moment in the history of sports, other than all the other times that they do it every single time. So thanks for bringing it. Because the thing is, I've had people give me the glass half full, including a bunch of listeners. They were close. They could have done it. They fought hard. No. They're Missouri. They're always close. Brutal loss. And this is sort of how I feel bad making fun of for Penn State, because I forgot what it's like to care.
Sucks, right?
Give Vandy credit, though. What's more sustainable, Vandy or Indiana? I think it's Indiana, too. This is another reason that the treacherousness of college football coaching, there are programs that are going to rise up that you didn't expect before because of the new way that you can build a winner. And that's not happenstance. Where it happens might kind of be happenstance. That Cignetti went to Indiana, not somewhere else. But other programs that haven't been powerhouses are going to become powerhouses in medium or long term. And that only happens by replacing someone else. And so that's the other thing is you go to I'm just going to keep repeating myself. You go to a Texas, an LSU, a Penn State, and you don't do it. It's going to be harder to catch up as a coach because you're going to have to play programs you never expected to be competitive. And if you are slow out of the gate, it's going to affect recruiting, and then it's going to start to affect NIL money. Because boosters are going to be like, I'm not giving money to James Franklin 2.0, even if it's just a bad five or six games. The days of Dabo Sweeney being able to build a program slowly and surely are over. And that creates a lot more chance and a lot more happenstance, no matter how good you are as a coach, and whether you make it or don't make it, regardless of where you go. And Vandy's an example of this. Vandy is here, at least for the moment. And if they're a top 10 program, that means somebody else that was in the SEC that should be is not.
Number four.
How about the Big 12, Bill? Maybe the quietest, most successful conference of college football. They come into this week with five teams ranked in the AP Top 25, which is tied for the Big 10 for second most by conference. You have BYU coming in at number 10. Texas Tech is ranked 13th in the country. Cincinnati comes in number 17, Houston 22, and Utah cracks the top 25 after they just absolutely put a beatdown on Colorado. They rank 24. College Game Day showing them some love for the first time this season. They're going to a non-SEC or Big Ten campus. They'll be there for Cincinnati, Utah. And how about this finally? The Big 12 has 13 teams in the conference that are 500 or better, tied for the most of any conference.
Here's my... I hate the term hot take, so I use it sarcastically. Here's my hot take. They're not the best conference in football. They don't have the best teams in football. It is the most interesting conference in football to watch week in, week out. And this, for me, Ryan, is a carryover from last year. If you remember, and give me the details here. Correct me where I'm missing this, where I'm getting this wrong. I think it was the last 3 weeks where a handful of schools, multiple schools, more than a handful, were all capable of that. They just won out. And then won the Big 12 championship. They were in the playoff. It went all the way down to Colorado. At the time, Colorado's not good this year. I think they're 1-4 in conference. But the thing about this conference is it's clustered together to such an extent that as we get near the end of the regular season, you're going to have basically a conference, Ryan. And I know other conferences do this too, but last year was more in the Big 12, and it could be this year too, where multiple games from multiple weeks are in effect playoffs, where it's whoever loses is out, but whoever wins continues to have a path forward to get into the Big 12 championship game, and then obviously if you win that thing, you're in. And it's really fun. I mean, where do the bad teams begin? I guess maybe Colorado, which is crazy. Like, that's the first definite bad team.
I'm just looking now, to your point, like with how close the conference is, we're going into November.
Yeah.
Eight teams of the 16 are either 3-2 or better.
Right.
So, like, when you're playing each other, you have probably at least bare minimum half the conference with four games left, four or five games, depending on your schedule, with a realistic chance to, like you said, go to the Big 12 and be 60 minutes away from being in the Big 12 title game to punch your ticket to go to the College Football Playoff.
And three or four of them are 2-3. And so like, if you're Iowa, I'm trying to think who else, Baylor, whoever it is, mm-hmm. you're probably not a path forward. But if you don't lose again and you get some help along the way. By the way, BYU, Brady Papinga's team, not just undefeated in conference, just undefeated.
Nice win over Iowa State comeback.
Yeah.
In the second half, they looked really good.
And that's the thing is like, that's the other thing is it's not just what we're talking about just it's exciting. There are landmines everywhere. Iowa State, which is not a highly, they beat Iowa this year, brutal. That's a good football team by Big 12 standards. There are landmines across almost the entirety of the conference, outside of like Oklahoma State or West Virginia.
To your point, I mean, I haven't looked at the Big Ten or the SEC, but I feel pretty confident saying Iowa State's ninth in the Big 12. They're probably the best ninth-ranked team in the conference in the country.
100%.
That's not an easy one. That's like, okay, we throw our helmets out that we got this. That's Iowa State, to highlight this, Iowa State on Saturday was the favorite at home over BYU.
Dude, Iowa State is they're 5-3 overall. They're 2-3 in conference, right? They've lost three in a row. At a certain point, they were the toast of Iowa, the toast of the Midwest, or one of them, and they were 2-0 in conference. They are, even though they're like an afterthought now, they're an example of how close the margins are.
Parity to the extreme.
I like parity.
Same.
Yeah.
I like unpredictability. It's a lot of fun.
It's good for the game.
Absolutely.
Number five.
And to highlight some other notable scores here from the weekend, Bill, Indiana ripped apart UCLA 56-6, while Alabama staged their biggest fourth quarter comeback since 2021 as they came back from 8 down to sneak past South Carolina 29-22. Georgia Tech, another team we're talking about here, benefiting from the downfall of a lot of big programs. They're 8-0 for the first time since 1966. They are ranked in the top 10 as they smoke Syracuse 41-16, while as we just mentioned, BYU, they are 8-0 after their 41-27 win over Iowa State. And Bill Belichick, oh, did he come close, Bill? Oh, so close. Virginia, ranked 16th in the country going into Saturday, stopped a two-point conversion that was inches away from being converted, and they escaped Chapel Hill with a 17-16 win over UNC.
The other thing about college football that speaks to how much it's closed the gap with the NFL, not closed the gap, I know it hasn't closed the gap, but it is maybe the better way to say it is how much more interesting and relevant it is than baseball or the NBA. Just how much distance it's put. Bill Belichick and Arch Manning were the biggest stories heading to college football. And they're I don't know if Arch is a punchline, but Arch is sort of is a warning. And Bill Belichick is a punchline. And it's still amazing. Can I just go back quickly to that Indiana blowout? That was a 50-burger against UCLA. And I'm just going to hammer this home as another example. I know none of you take UCLA seriously, but they take themselves seriously. And a couple years ago, they thought they were on the verge of sort of being able to break through. We're going to go to this conference. We're going to succeed. We're going to get a bunch more money. We survived the end of the Pac-12 that we were a part of. And they're a joke. They are absolutely awful. I know they're not what Nebraska used to be, and it's not the same fall from grace that Penn State is feeling this year or that USC has felt because they haven't been able to get back to the top of the mountain, or that LSU's feeling right now. But it's just a reminder that you can wake up in a world where Indiana is beating UCLA 56-6, and that's expected.
It's crazy, right?
It's crazy.
Crazy time.
That was five of them? I wasn't keeping track.
That was five.
You were pushing numbers, and I just, you know, number, not listening.
It flies by when you're having fun. There's a lot, like, we talked a lot about the coaching stuff, but on the field is just as exciting as one of the craziest coaching searches we've seen in a while, or will be.
This is why I don't want an expanded college football playoff, in part because they've done it, they did it, we've had a very small, probably a year of it. Let it sit for a while, because I think it's going to command more and more and more bandwidth and attention from general sports fans. And I think that the thing that this is the parity and the playoff in particular is going to do is that college football is kind of interesting in that it's football, so it's giant, but it's also niche. If you're a Penn State fan, you're really into Penn State. If you're a USC fan, you're really into USC. And I would argue, Ryan, and you may not agree because you're a big time college football guy, but I used to cover it. I think at the end of seasons, as we got to bowl time, people just didn't care if it wasn't their program. I mean, they put it on in the background, but I don't know if people were really, oh man, Iowa's playing whatever, USC in the Rose Bowl, but it doesn't matter for any sort of implications. But now you've got multiple bowl games that have implications. You have every conference championship game is critical to who's going to win a national championship. And games at the end of the season that would never have been significant, go back to the Big 12, matter. And for me, at least, as a sports fan, it's hard for me to get into a team that's good where they're not playing for anything. I can get into a team that's mediocre if they're playing for something. I can get into the vibe and the feel of that. So college football has made its games meaningful beyond the sort of ecosystems of I'm from this college town. I was with my buddy Ross this weekend, and he lives in Madison. He's a Wisconsin fan. He goes to Wisconsin games. And he was talking about Wisconsin football in this really in-depth, interesting way. And I was thinking, man, like, poor Ross. He's talking about only the 15 programs in America that don't matter, because almost every program matters. But now if Iowa State finds a way to keep winning games, or whoever it is in the Big 12 that nobody would care about outside of that community or that conference, you'll watch it, right? Even if it's the week before the Big 12, if some random team's like, oh, if I win, I'm in. If I beat BYU this weekend, I'm somehow into the Big 12 championship. That's a playoff game. It's amazing.
I'm with you. I'm in. If there's stakes on the line, I'm watching.
All right. We're going to do a little buy or sell, getting a little bit of baseball. Dodgers taking on the Blue Jays. We'll dive into that, baby, and some other topics next year on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
Mets are still the Mets. Bears are still the Bears. Water is wet in the sky.
What does that have to do? What does that have to do with baseball?
Well, nothing.
What do you think of this no-hitter? The Bears suck. I know they. What are we talking about? We're going to talk more about that Bears game. Ryan will giggle some more about it because he's a bad person.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
Welcome back into the show. The rejoin's funny because the Bears got beat by the Ravens. Great. I'm already jaded, Ryan. You don't need to put salt in the wound of a wound I can't feel.
By the way, beat by the Ravens with a backup quarterback.
I'm aware of what occurred. Anything else?
That's it. I mean, I did include it. I did not include it in buy or sell. I could have easily. That
you
was
just
the worst
included
loss
it in
the weekend,
rejoin.
But, well, that was funny. And also, just remember all the shots you've taken at Penn State and the Colts for months and months and months.
Oh, I'm a hypocrite. Don't get me wrong. Totally, absolutely legitimate on your part. I just don't really like it. We're on today, by the way. We are on today. Let's do a little nicer if we can. Let's aim for a gentler version, Ryan Hickey, of buy or sell.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
All right, so we're going to go nice here. So we're going to leave the Bears alone. We'll leave Penn State alone. And let's just talk about some other big stories going on in sports. Obviously, the biggest one right now is that a new college football team has entered the proverbial Lane Kiffin sweepstakes. As last night, LSU fired head coach Brian Kelly, coming off a blowout loss at home to Texas A&M. The Tigers have had a lot of recent success when it comes to head coaches, as before Kelly, the last head coach that didn't win a national title was Jared DiNardo, who was fired in 1999. I'm going to give you a two-parter.
That's a crazy stat, by the way.
Right?
Yeah, that's amazing.
Really, really impressive by LSU. Two-part buy or sell. Part one, buy or sell. Lane Kiffin should leave Ole Miss for LSU.
So we know that's a sell.
Sell.
Based on my eloquent open of the show, which I argued against it. Okay, got it.
Part two, let's just say he has to leave. Buy or sell, if you're Lane Kiffin, you'd rather go to LSU over Florida or any other open job.
Is Texas open?
Right now, no.
LSU over Florida. You know what? Sell.
Sell.
Here's the thing. This is the other thing that's hard, makes it hard to evaluate. I don't cover the booster scene, and that's a huge variable. How difficult are they? How intrusive? You tell me there's a guy that'll cut a $100 million check and doesn't need to be involved, right? Just like, here's the money. Go for it. Just Lane golf with me rather than Lane, I need to talk about why the linebacker's not playing, or I'm not sure that's the formation we should be using. You know, it's a different thing. But in that vacuum, Florida.
All right. So now that LSU's fired Brian Kelly, they join Florida, Penn State, Virginia Tech, UCLA, Arkansas, Oklahoma State, among other jobs, with openings this offseason. Now, the cycle may not end, as Florida State will keep an eye on. Auburn, Wisconsin, hell, maybe even Texas could join the list of head coach vacancies before the season is over. Buy or sell, Bill. Schools like Florida State and Auburn should wait to fire their coaches until next season.
Buy. It's a really good point. And inherent in the question is a good point that you're making. There's only so many coaches, and you're going to get a lesser coach that costs you more money. Now, I guess the flip side of this is, what if this pattern of a lack of patience and immediate consequences continues? And maybe it's, you need to line up the next coach. You need to know that you can go get somebody. But again, Indiana, when they went and hired Cignetti, the college football world didn't go, oh man, he beat us to him. And so it's, do you have a good enough AD to be able to recognize who the guy is? Buy or sell? I have a question for you. Buy or sell, you think Lane Kiffin will take a different job between now and the start of next season?
Sell.
Buy or sell, because you think he was going to, but then he heard the open of this show and he went, wow, that guy speaks to me.
Buy.
Me too. Yes.
What's also interesting too, timing-wise, what if Ole Miss goes on a run? Like, what if they go to the, I mean, they're a good team. What if they're in the college football playoff semifinal?
They could be.
That's like, I think, January 9th, January 8th. For these schools, right, if you want to hire Lane Kiffin, for some of them are open. If you're going to fire a coach, you know, right after the season, we're talking about 6 weeks.
Can you imagine there? If Lane Kiffin left like he did at Alabama, but instead of being the coordinator, he was the head guy. I'm out. Good luck, boys.
You're going to play Indiana in the semifinal, but actually, I got to go to Texas because I got to start recruiting for the Longhorns for next year.
What we haven't discussed, right, and I don't think it's a good idea, but it is when a program is so desperate to hire, say, Lane Kiffin, that they just go, here's $25 million a year for 10 years or some, right? And Lane Kiffin goes, I mean, I don't even know what he makes, 8 or 9 probably. And he just goes, I mean, it's $25 million. You know, the buyout is $120. That's the kind of thing that might tempt you. And if you're telling me that there's a 0% chance, if you're offered $250 million to go whatever, Texas, wherever, Florida, anywhere, LSU, that you wouldn't at least think about saying, good luck, boys. I've got a little real estate property in Atlanta, Cecilia.
It is fascinating. It is really, really fascinating. What if... Look, I think he's matured, but past history suggests maybe this is possible. What if he is entertained by LSU, Texas, Florida, etc., and Ole Miss keeps winning playoff games? Is it possible you think maybe we got a Josh McDaniels cult situation where a team like Texas or Florida, all right, we think we got Lane in the bag. As soon as Ole Miss loses, we got him. They keep winning, winning, winning. All of a sudden, Lane goes, you know what? I kind of like it here.
I mean,
I'm going to stay. Sorry. And now all of a sudden you're sitting there middle of January.
Bye.
Bye.
It can happen. Full stop, period. It can happen even more with Lane Kiffin.
That would be. Add another chapter to the book of Lane. That is for sure. Oh,
who
boy.
Plays Lane Kiffin in the movies? You know what? Who's the guy that was in Thank You for Smoking? Aaron Eckhart. He might be too old, though.
Who's the hot actor now?
Timothée Chalamet?
No, not him. He's
he's not ripped enough.
No, he's not. He's in the football, the new football movie.
The new football movie. What movie is the new football movie?
Or the TV show about Chad Powers. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, that's a good, I've met him, Glenn Powell.
Glenn Powell, thank you.
That's a good one.
That could be the guy, Glenn Powell.
Because if you did the Lane Kiffin story all the way, and you got a little edgy with it,
good movie.
Be entertaining.
Oh, it would. It would.
King
for
Kiffin.
Sure. King. Oh. Mm. Trademark that.
Bye. Hollywood, I'm ready.
Bye.
Executive producer Bill Ryder.
You can have it for $250 million.
there you go.
In the NFL, Bill, a big controversy over the weekend centered around the status of Lamar Jackson. So after the Ravens on Friday reported that Lamar was a full participant in practice, they, the next day on Saturday, had to retract that report, instead clarifying that while Lamar took every snap at practice, it was for the scout team. And then on Saturday, ruled him out of the game against the Bears. Post-game yesterday, John Harbaugh explained the mishap and what happened. Take a listen.
I'm not involved in those rules. I don't know those particular rules. So that was probably, I think, in their defense, you know, he practiced a full practice. I think they felt like because he did the same number of reps, it was a full practice. But when you dig in and you read the rule, At the end of the day, it wasn't right. So that's what it was. That's why as soon as we found out, we changed it. It's an honest mistake. I mean, it really is an honest mistake. I can tell you this. Nobody's trying to hide anything. I mean, there's no advantage. There's no advantage to be gained, you know, with that. I mean, it was, he practiced. His status was what it was. He was questionable. I do think if we'd have had the old status, maybe they would have said doubtful. Maybe, I don't know. But questionable or out. You know, we weren't going to say out because he wasn't out, you know, until Saturday when that conversation was had on the medical side.
Buy or sell, Bill? This is a big deal.
Buy, yeah.
Buy.
Timing of this, I think, maybe illustrates, illuminates. I don't know if you guys all saw this. The NBA is involved in a gambling scandal. Adam Silver, Congress would like him to come visit. Some of it is about information being assessed early, allegedly by Damon Jones, about LeBron James' availability. Availability matters. Nick Costos, I thought, was great on Friday, walking us through why that's valuable. Getting the information wrong on the report, but the people within the Ravens organization knowing it's different, gives an advantage to anyone who has access to the actual information.
This thought popped in my head. I want to get your thoughts. Buy or sell? So people, I'm sure, once they heard Lamar Jackson was practicing fully, said, oh, I'm going to bet the Ravens.
Right.
In that 24-hour period from when the practice report came out to on Saturday when they said, actually, just kidding, he's out. Buy or sell, the Ravens should be forced to pay back every bettor who put money down on the Ravens.
I mean, sell, because you can't be involved in
it. Sell.
Also, think about him being involved increases the odds the Ravens win. You bet on the Ravens. But the other way it goes is the report gets corrected. It becomes clear that he's not playing. Then the line shifts, and a bunch of people go, oh, we got to bet the Bears. The Ravens won, as you have so unkindly pointed out like 17 times on the show. To me, a Bears fan.
And that line went from 6.5 to 1.5.
Right.
Once the new, like, that's a huge swing.
It is. Oh, my God.
Now, it didn't end up mattering, but like, what if
But it could have.
What if you got, right, what if you got locked in, all of a sudden the Bears, because it's Tyler Huntley, he throws 3 picks, Bears win 30-16, and it's like, you got screwed.
It should have happened. Can we move on to a topic that isn't the Bears losing
That's
the game?
That's fair. You have to talk about another one.
What a
one
bad
that
loss that is. Buy or sell, that's one of the worst losses of the year for a team. If you factor in like upside, potential, all that.
Buy.
Yeah.
That's a bad one. Maybe the Rams on that Thursday night game when like everyone and their mother was out for the 49ers and they still found a way to win on the road.
It's funny you bring that up. My theory, and there's another one that's, did the Bengals win a game they shouldn't have on a Thursday night? I can't.
Joe Flacco, the last Thursday night game we saw. Last time, was that a week and a half ago?
Yeah. I don't think Thursday night games count the same way because home teams on Thursday night, home dogs tend to outperform what you would expect historically on Thursday night football. And, I mean, it's the same in the record, but there's an excuse. What's the excuse for Chicago? We're the Bears. We suck. That's our excuse. Bye. That's it. Yes, that's.
You first. Didn't know what quarterback was playing. I was supposed to prepare.
Yeah, that was the problem. Oops. They tricked us.
From one maybe annoying topic to another, the tush push. Everyone loves talking about the tush push on the controversy. Well, another log was added to the fire as on Sunday in the first half, the Eagles ran their signature play in a fourth down and short. So as Jalen Hurts was surging towards the first down marker, he reached the ball out. And as he was doing so, Giants defender Kayvon Thibodeau stripped the ball away and recovered it. But unfortunately for the Giants, the fumble was null and void because the refs ruled that forward progress was stopped despite the fact that with your eyes, it happened very quickly and there was no whistle before Hurts was stripped. Buy or sell, the tush push will be banned by next year.
I mean, I want buy.
Buy.
Wishful thinking. I hope so. By the way, that was ridiculous.
That,
insult to injury, dude.
Remember the Eagles-Chiefs game where they ran it like 8 times?
Yeah.
They got it passed, and it feels like every week there's a new reason to be like, we made a mistake.
It's bad for the game. And tush push, stupid name. I'm over it. Oh, it rhymes.
Brotherly shove, you like that one better?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. The Jets, Bill, they finally entered the win column on Sundays. They came back from a 15-point fourth quarter deficit to beat the Bengals 39-38. Justin Fields, a few days after his owner threw him under the bus, threw for 244 yards and a touchdown, while Breece Hall rushed for 133 yards, rushed for 2 touchdowns, and also ended up throwing for the game-winning score on a trick play. The win also came hours after the passing of franchise legend Nick Mangold. Buy or sell, the Jets winning was the best story from Sunday.
I'll buy.
Buy.
But you know that I'm partial to Justin Fields. And to be able to shove that in his owner's face, the best revenge is massive success. And since Justin Fields will never have great revenge, just a little bit of revenge is mediocre success. So let's get it.
And finally, Bill, Game 3 of the World Series is tonight, and the result could go a long way to determining who this year's champion is. The winner of Game 3 of the World Series, when the series is tied 1-1 like it is here, has gone on to win the World Series 69% of the time. The pitching matchup features Max Scherzer for Toronto taking on Tyler Glasnow for LA. Buy or sell? Tonight's winner will win the World Series.
Sell. I don't.
Sell.
Lies, damn lies, statistics. Lies, damn lies, statistics. I think the Dodgers are going to win the World Series, regardless of who wins tonight.
And what if they win tonight?
I mean,
then you're saying you're not going to lock
it up? I don't know who's going to win, so I'm not going to. It's not because. Yeah, that's fair. No, it's not because of that. It's a hard question to answer because there's a 50% chance I'm right, but a 50% chance I'm wrong. But I sell the notion that Game 3 winner, when it's 1-1, is significantly definitive.
Okay.
I laugh in the face of history.
Now, what about if this was Game 5? Are you one of those guys that believes in the 2-2 Game 5 tilts?
No, man, I'm a Cubs fan. I was at the Bartman game. Can we stop with the mean stuff?
I was not trying to throw a shot there. There's time. I'm just trying to test your lack of belief in statistics and how far it goes.
I have a lack of belief in you right now. That's what I have.
Mercifully for you, buy ourselves over.
Mercifully for me and Andrew. All right, let's talk a little baseball after a sports flash for Andrew Bogus.
Infinity Sports Network Sports Flash.
This Sports Flash is sponsored by Prize Picks. The hard-hitting football action's even better with Prize Picks. Download Prize Picks, use code PRIMETIME, and get $50 in bonus credit instantly when you play $5. Must be present in certain states. Visit prizepicks.com. for restrictions and details. Jordan Love got the better of Aaron Rodgers in their mini reunion last night in Pittsburgh.
Play clock is at 14. Love gets the snap. He's back to pass. Looks, fires over the middle. That's caught inside the 15, down to the 10, angling left 5, into the end zone. Touchdown Green Bay. Tucker Kraft again.
Ryan Ratke on Westwood 1. Love threw 2 touchdown passes to Tucker Kraft. 3 total as Green Bay rallied for a 35-25 win on Sunday Night Football. The Packers scored 21 fourth quarter points. Love finished with 360 yards, completed 20 consecutive passes at one point. Rodgers, 2 touchdown passes in his first game against Green Bay. The morning after firing Brian Kelly, LSU is reportedly letting go of offensive coordinator Joe Sloan. And Austin Reeves scored a career-high 51 as the Lakers won in Sacramento 127-120 without LeBron and Luka. I'm Andrew Bogish.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you here on Writer Than You. Thank you for listening. This portion of the program is sponsored by Square. More than 4 million neighborhood businesses run on Square. To learn more, go to square.com or just stop by your favorite local business. See you in the neighborhood, Square. World Series Game 3 tonight. Ryan, I normally root for the Dodgers. I have worked for the Dodgers Radio Network. I live in Los Angeles. I am not a Dodgers fan, but as happens in this business, I think as happens in life, when you get to know people, if you like them, you root for them. If you realize that they're a jerk face, Chris Paul, in your experience, you don't root for them. It's really that simple. And I find, and I haven't been around the Dodgers in several years, but I found, I should say, the Dodgers organization to be classy, impressive, well-run, good culture. I like Andrew Friedman. I like the people that were a part of the organization when I was there. Clayton Kershaw is a pretty good guy, I think. Dave Roberts is good people. I live in L.A. and my kids are Cubs fans, but they kind of like the Dodgers, right? They're in the area. Shohei Ohtani, to me, is just favorite athlete territory. Doesn't matter who he plays for. He could play for the Yankees, and I'd be in. I love Ohtani, and I am struggling to root for L.A. In part because, and the thing about the Dodgers that makes it complicated, and I think wrong-headed to just say, they spent $500 million, they have too much money, they've gotten all the MVPs, I want them to lose, is that's all true. They brought in Mookie Betts, they brought in Shohei Ohtani. I mean, just go down the list of the people they brought in. It's amazing. And the guys they moved on from, well, Corey Seager, yeah, we're cool. See you later. Trey Turner is going to come in for a half a second. We'll make it work. The thing is, they outspend people, and they offer a project, an organization, a reality, almost certainty of a chance at championships along with LA weather and Dodger Stadium's a cool place to play, where you're just going to have an advantage in recruiting. You talk to ball players. I say as a guy with Chicago roots, guys would just rather play baseball in LA than in Chicago or Boston, where it's really cold at the start of the year and it's really cold at the end of the year. And it's, especially if you're a hitter, it really affects you, especially getting out of the gate. LA has a lot of advantages. The other thing that's frustrating about them, but I think makes it hard to hate them, is they do everything well. Their farm system is remarkable. This year's not an example of this, but Andrew Friedman is a master, and they said this at his introductory press conference 10, 15 years ago, at identifying pitchers that aren't highly valued and recognizing that they will make a great bullpen. This guy is undervalued at this specialty, and this left-handed pitcher is going to be good in small sample sizes. So normally, not this year, normally they put together bullpens that aren't fair. Not because they're spending like $1 billion, they'll do that too, but just because they recognize talent. This is money, but they understood the need to scout Latin America before most people did. They turned the Latin America scouting approach, again, 10, 15 years ago, into something that would be the most important approach for any other team in baseball based on the money they spent. And then what, and the way that Latin America scouting works is you don't have a draft. It's a free agency situation, basically. So what do the Dodgers bring to the table? They bring money to the table. And they are capable and they are willing, Andrew Friedman, to hire and surround himself with multiple GMs. Some GMs won't do that. You don't want, a lot of guys want to be the smartest person in the room, right? And you've all worked places like this or covered or been fans of sports teams where the boss is a little insecure. Not the Dodgers. And so part of the thing that makes it hard to hate them is they do everything well. Yeah, they spend the money and they spend all the money. They also spend a huge part of their revenue. Dodgers fans will tell you this, that other big teams don't, that they're reinvesting in the team. They've crushed Latin America. They have an incredible farm system. They do a great job at developing coaches. They have a great culture. If you don't get along in the clubhouse, they're like, see you later. They'll move on. Manny Machado's a guy. They're just like, we don't really want this guy here anymore. And I still, Ryan, I'm having trouble rooting for them. And I am Blue Jays agnostic. I don't have any feelings about Toronto. I'm not mad at them. I don't love them. I don't hate them. Vlad is fun to watch, right? Okay, they have a talented guy that I want to see play. Because it's not the Dodgers' fault, but they do represent an obnoxious reality in Major League Baseball. And they're the ones that are good at it. It was one thing when the Yankees represented this, but they were so basic in how they put their team together that they didn't win all the time. It just feels like the Dodgers are on the cusp of winning 6 of the next 8 World Series. And that, I don't want that.
I mean, obviously, I don't either. But also, I have a tough time rooting against, I think, a team that does it the right way.
I get
it. They go for it. I think it's in baseball. I feel like there's too many teams that cry poor and accept, oh, we can't beat the bad, you know, the big boys. So, like, why even bother trying? And so I just have a problem. I get it. Look, it's easy to say with the money spent. I just have a problem. Like, you just outline. Like, they do so many things well, more than just spending good money. They're smart. That they are detailed. I have a tough time saying you do everything right and now I'm going to root against you. Like, I want teams that do it the right way to get rewarded.
I mean, Shohei Ohtani, 10 years, $700 million. Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who's, by the way, been amazing, 12 years, $365 million. Blake Snell, 12 years, $325 million. Freddie Freeman, 5 years, $182 million. I mean, Tyler Glasnow, 10 years, $140 million. I didn't even read you Mookie Betts because he's been there for a minute. I mean, the players the Dodgers have signed as free agents since Andrew Friedman arrived, just those players, if you put them on any other team, you put them in the Pirates and you got rid of everybody, any other, just they made their own team, the Andrew Friedman free agency castoffs, they are winning 82 games. You know, obviously it depends on how you fill out the roster or whatever, but they're a team that's winning 82 to 100 games. Just the free agents. Just you know, Clayton Kershaw is just like a sagacious old guy who's like, put his locker next to me, says Blake Snell. I'm going to learn. I mean, he's just a guy that's in there. Max Muncy, he's been around. So he doesn't. I mean, it's just player after player after player after player. But I'm with you. I'm not rooting against them, but it's the first time. They're kind of like the Chiefs. I'm not a fan of them, but I have a connection, and I think they're classy. So I'm like, okay, yeah, I win all the stuff. That's fine. I haven't gotten there yet with Kansas City. In part because the Chiefs can't outspend anybody. I mean, that's just not how it works in the National Football League. So I can, you know, what the Chiefs have done, maybe this speaks to why I'm not as angry about the Chiefs as everyone else. They did it within the system. The Dodgers have an advantage in the system, and they use this, and they use it well. Congratulations. But it's a different thing. Like the Padres, if the Padres could spend $500 million, they'd spend $500 million. They already spend beyond their means anyway. And it's a system that allows some owners, you're right, to just say, I don't care. I'm just going to collect money. I'm going to make money. All right. So go. I guess I just want good baseball. You know what I want? I want seven games. And then I don't care who wins. It would be cool to see Shohei Ohtani hit three homers again in a, you know, in a game seven pitch or something.
That'd be pretty crazy.
Coming and close it out or start. I don't know. Yeah. Fun show. Great to see you here in New York City. I'm back to L.A. shortly after this show ends, but it was great seeing you in person, Ryan.
This has been a treat the last 2 days, Bill. So much fun.
Yeah. Maybe we'll, maybe I'll get back out here in November or something. Maybe try to get back out to the city. Enjoy the vibe. Great work by you, by the way, just over the course of your time.
Oh, thank
doing
you,
this.
Bill.
Yeah. Can't be nice to you when I get to LA, so I gotta be nice to you when I'm, you know, say the true stuff now, right? It's guy stuff.
Like a real man. Lie to the face and just right. Say all the real things you feel behind my back.
There
I like it.
There you go. Ryan's the best. Ryan's the best. I'm Bill Ryder. Thanks for listening. Appreciate you very much. We'll see you back here tomorrow on Ryder Than You.